Hello friends, and welcome to vlog number one of our True Holiness series. This is the second vlog series that we have done. The first series was on finished work eschatology. It went about 40 vlogs in length. I do about 20 minutes at a time on each of those. I don't know where this particular series will end up. I don't know how many we'll do, and I don't know how long each will take. But the idea of what is true holiness in light of the new covenant has really been on my heart lately. And I've had the question posed to me as well. And so a lot of circumstances begin to align to let me know that this was where the Spirit would have me to go. We subtitle this first vlog, Objective Holiness. We'll deal with the subject of holiness in both the Old and the New Testament, but I wanted to jump right out of the gate by dealing with the verse that I'm taking the real thought from, and that is true holiness, which is found in Ephesians 4:24. Before I read that, I just want to familiarize my audience with my style. And if you've never watched one of our vlogs, never watched any of our ministry, I like to take my time. I don't feel pressure to go quickly. I don't be offended if I don't respond to either your enjoyment or your disagreements on this series. It is not that I'm not concerned or that I don't take things to heart. A lot of times I don't even see them, what the objections or the compliments are. But also, I just don't jump into the fray. I don't think a lot is accomplished back and forth in that manner. And so I just teach what I see in the Word, the way that I see it. If it blesses you, great. And hopefully it helps us to grow as we journey through the Word. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 24, that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. The old King James says, and righteousness and true holiness. We'll deal with the context of this, which is, I want to read that in a moment. Don't be disturbed if on today's vlog we don't go too deep into what Paul means through the context. We're going to deal with that in the coming weeks. I just want to deal with the phrase holiness or true holiness. What is true holiness versus some other idea of holiness, and why would the apostle even bother to differentiate? To get the context, let's pick up verses 20 through 24. But you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man, which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. In the coming weeks, we'll deal with what it means to put off and what it means to put on. We'll deal with the spirit of the mind. But for today, let's deal with, first of all, true, and then holiness. The word true is from the Greek word aletheia, aletheia, and it's where we derive our subtitle this week. True, the word aletheia means objectively what is true in any matter under consideration. So this is the objective side of the word truth. You've heard people say, that's not truth to me. That's a subjective truth. That's where the truth isn't the truth, but it's truth according to me. The word aletheia does not have that within its Greek structure. It is not a subjective true holiness. It is the objective true holiness. It is the objective version, or the God, I like to say it this way, it's God's version. There's no arguing with it. It is what he says that it is. That's true. And if you want to see this in the Greek, this is an absolute in the Greek. One of the reasons why I gave the context stretching back at least to verse 21 is because there is your context. Look at verse 21. If indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus. This objective form of truth in the Greek is used here. So we have the introduction of that objectiveness This is God's version, not man's version. When I was younger, I remember hearing it preached.
There is a prescriptive morality and there is a descriptive morality.
And the point this preacher was making was that there's a morality that God says is moral, and then there's a morality that man says is moral. And then, of course, in the course of the sermon, he proceeded to tell us everything that was prescribed by God versus all the things that society had described. I don't like to go down the road of this is what God says is good, this is what man says is good. We get into a lot of areas that really aren't fruitful. I don't know that the phrasing was correct, prescriptive, descriptive, but I think the heartbeat behind that thought was, and maybe this is a better way, I don't know, it's another way of saying it, there's an objective and there's a subjective. There's what God does and there's man's response to what God does. And so in this idea of truth, in this passage, we're not talking about what you think is true or what I think is true, but there is a true holiness that is a part of the new man. Let's look at the word holiness now. The Greek word used here for holiness is hosiotes. Hosiotes. And the word hosiotes in this passage is closely associated with righteousness. In fact, the coupling here is coupled correctly in the Greek, righteousness and true holiness, or true righteousness and holiness. True is describing both righteousness and holiness. It's literally, and for those that might not have an understanding of righteousness, righteousness is not doing the right thing. Righteousness is right standing. So if the Greek structure holds true, that the true holiness is describing both the righteousness of the believer and the holiness of the believer, and these are objective righteousnesses and objective holinesses. They are not open to debate. They are not open to discussion. Then the word holiness, hosiotes, clearly associated with right standing. Then what Paul is saying in Ephesians 4:24 is that when you put on the new man, you're putting on objective righteousness, objective right standing with God, which also has as its bedfellow objective holiness, the objective holiness of God. You're not looking at this as an option. These are not go do right things, do holy things. No, they are standings. You are God's righteousness. You are God's holiness. That's objective holiness, and that's Paul's definition of true holiness. Here's something important that you'll learn in the Greek structure. Now, I'm not a Greek scholar. I did my in my grad work on my road to theology degree, I had to do my fair share of Hebrew studies and I had to do my fair share of Greek studies. Takes a lot longer than that to be a scholar in either of those languages. But I did learn a thing or two about how to study these languages. And in this passage, this hosiotes, this holiness, is not associated with the quality of holiness. It has nothing to do with the performance of holinesses or holiness associated with conduct. And what I find is that in a lot of cases when people talk about holiness, they only talk about conduct, and they do it pretty much in the same breath as righteousness. That if you're righteous, you're going to do righteous things. If you're holy, you're going to do holy things. And while we'll make a case for those things as we go, it is not what the New Testament is talking about in regards to holiness. Let me show you this kind of quality of holiness used in the New Testament. 2 Corinthians chapter 1. This is a prime example. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 12. For our boasting is this, the testimony of our conscience, that we conducted ourselves in the world in simplicity
and godly sincerity, not with fleshly wisdom, but by the grace of God, and more abundantly toward you. Whenever Paul talks about simplicity and godly sincerity, the Greek syntax is a quality of holiness, or a holiness associated with conduct. Paul doesn't talk about that conduct as being part and parcel of his righteousness. He doesn't say we're doing this to please God or curry God's favor. But instead he says, I can testify that I've conducted myself in the world in a holy manner. That's a whole different Greek word than the word that is used in Ephesians 4:24 to describe true holiness. So, since the word is describing a standing, then it is describing who you are. It is not describing what you do. Let me explore this a little bit more by introducing the character of Jesus. I would ask you this. Was Jesus holy because of what Jesus did? Was Jesus holy because of what Jesus did not do? Or was Jesus holy because he was Jesus? Now, whenever Jesus is baptized in the Jordan, the heavens open, the Spirit descends like a dove, and a voice from heaven says, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." We have not seen Jesus perform a single miracle. We have not seen Jesus open the eyes of the blind, raise the dead, heal the sick. We haven't seen him feed one hungry person. In fact, the beginning of his miracles is John 2, when he turns water to wine, which tells me that he never performed a miracle. With all of this great power, he never did anything for the kingdom of God until his time came. So what made him holy? Was it getting down into the Jordan River to be baptized? Was it being born of the Virgin? Was it at age 12 when he was about his father's business? Was it anything he did? Was it anything he didn't do? I think everyone, regardless of your stance on holiness, whether it's objective, subjective, whether it's a standing, or whether it's an action, I think everybody would agree that Jesus was holy because he was Jesus, because he was the Son of God, because he was God in the flesh. He was Emmanuel, which if you needed any other word, you don't need any other word to describe the holiness of God than Emmanuel, which means God with us. Jesus was not a representative of God. He's God with us. It's why when Jesus dies on the cross, it's not God killing his son, some absurdity that people try to use to describe the cross. He is God. It's a sacrifice, God laying his own life down. So if you answer the question, Jesus was holy because he was Jesus, then his holiness was not predicated on what he did, neither was it predicated on what he did not do, but he was holy because he was holy, because that's who he was. So I would agree, his actions are holy, but his actions do not determine his standing with the Father. His standing with the Father would often determine his actions. So the first words you hear about Jesus from the Father are not, "This is my son, he does it right." No, "This is my son, in whom I am well pleased." So just being a son was well pleasing to the Father. It's why so much of our Christianity should be taken up with the idea that we are sons and not slaves. It's why Paul would spend ample time in his letter to the Galatians establishing them as sons instead of slaves. It's why the story of the prodigal son rings so loudly in our ears, because it's speaking to us of a familial, a family relationship of which we can all understand at least somewhat. And that's New Covenant reality. So Jesus is a son first, and he's holy because of his standing. Now, if Jesus is holy because he's Jesus, then he's not holier when he does something holy. And neither would he be less holy if he did something unholy. He is who he is because he is who he is. In fact, he answers, "I am." Nothing could be more clear, I don't think. So, how are we holy? What is our objective holiness? Ephesians 4:24, we put on the new man. It's created in righteousness and true holiness. True righteousness and holiness. This is an objective holiness. But Peter, one of the men who walked with Jesus, and we will definitely explore this deeper as we go. 1 Peter chapter 1, let me read 15 and 16. In fact, no, let me read 13 through 16. Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lusts as in your ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. Look at 15 again. As he who called you is holy, you also be holy. Now, we're going to explore all of these verses in the coming weeks, but I want to just drop this little thought on you. If Peter believed that you should be holy as he is holy, then the most important thing about holiness out of the gate is not you figuring out what you should do. Whenever Peter wants the conduct to clean up, he starts by telling them to be holy as God is holy. Or as the ESV says of 1 Peter 1:16, you shall be holy, for I am holy. Ask yourself this, how is God holy? Is he holy because he acts good, or is he holy because he's a holy God? Is he holy because of his conduct, or is he holy because he's a holy God? If he's holy based upon his conduct, what happens when his conduct is questioned? What happens when Jesus eats with sinners? What happens when he heals on the Sabbath day? What happens when he hangs on a piece of wood? These are all problems in the old covenant. He's not, and I'm not insinuating in any way that Jesus went out and sinned, but what happens when his actions don't line up with everybody else's definition of holy? It's not enough to just go, well, he's God, whatever he says is good is good. No, we know his character. We know who he is. So as he is holy, that's how we are holy. We're not holy because we do holiness. We're holy because we are his holiness. So as God is he holy from the outside in or from the inside out? I think we know he's holy from the inside out. How should we be holy? From the inside out. So really our question is this, how is God holy? He's holy because he's God. I ask you, how is the believer holy? They're holy because they're a believer. Why? For as many of us as believe on his name, to us he has given the authority to call ourselves the sons of God. I'm not making you out to be a little God, a little Jesus. I'm just saying what the Bible says about you. You're a son. If your father is holy because of who he is, and what his name is, then you are holy because of who you are and what your name is. I love it. Over the next few weeks, we're going to explore holiness as it was shown in the Old Testament, holiness as it is shown in the New Testament. We're going to take the passage from Ephesians 4, and we're going to break it down contextually. We're going to take our passage from 1 Peter chapter 1, and we're going to break it down contextually. We're going to take a look at some of those passages, as well as some that some might consider troubling. I don't think there's anything troubling about them at all, and I think we'll have a better sense of what true holiness is all about. Here's your homework for the week. If you want to read those verses, that's great, but just take a look at what the church is calling holiness. Go watch some people talk about true holiness or read some articles or things on holiness. Prepare yourself, because you're going to get a lot of performance. You're going to have people purging things out of their lives. You're going to have people taking this away. You're going to have people adding this. They're trying to achieve some sort of holiness. We'll talk about adding to and taking away as we go and where those things may or may not be appropriate. But just go take a look at the definition of holiness and see where it lines up with what we've been talking about from Ephesians 4. We're going to have a wonderful journey together. We'll see you again soon. God bless.